No playing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to D20 Dudes, a tabletop role-playing podcast where the die decides our topic. I am Dylan.
My name's Molly.
And today, you do chemistry. Mm-hmm. We got chemistry. And today, we're going to be talking about my favorite murder fuckers, the Drakari of Warhammer 40K. Bring it back to that. It's been like a year since I've done a 40K episode.
Die be a sad mistress, I'm guessing.
My brain just completely shut off there for a second. Anyway, Drakari, dark elves, dark, horny space elves. So in order to launch into this, we're going to do a small, brief history of the Eldari here, because it's really the Eldari Empire split into like four different factions at one point, and it all came from a singular event. That event being the birth of the Chaos God, Slaanesh. Back in the day, the Eldari were basically created as a biological weapon by the Old Ones for the war in heaven to fight against the Necron, who are soulless automaton Egyptian robots.
The Drakari?
No, that's the Necron.
Okay. I was confused.
The Necron more or less won the war in heaven and killed all the Old Ones, or they all disappeared into doing something. Who fucking knows? The Old Ones are gone. And the Necrons went to sleep for a long time. Real long time. Like millions of years long time. Mm-hmm. The Eldari became the dominant species in the galaxy, and they were dominant for a very, very long time, particularly because they had incredibly powerful psychic abilities. Psychic abilities come from one's connection to the warp, so because they had such powerful psychic abilities, they had a lot of influence over the immaterial world and the warp. Meaning they could basically just kind of do whatever the hell they wanted. They could make gods. They could just build a god if they felt like it. If they needed a god, bam, there's a god now, because we built it with our brain minds. That's how powerful the goddang Eldari were. Then they decided, we live basically forever, because even if we die, we can just pick a new body and our soul goes in there and now we're alive again. And they got real bored. And in order to alleviate that boredom, they go into emotional extremes. And to attain these emotional extremes, they start doing things like having vulgar, unprotected, unchristian sex and murdering the hell out of each other. And then eventually doing both at the same time until it got so crazy and chaotic that there were literally Drakari death cults running around out in the streets. And it was just a common thing.
No, a few on Wikipedia, it says that they're called pleasure cults. So
yeah,
death is cults. Secondary to pleasure.
It's a kind of pleasure when you like watching people die. We
it's
call
a
it death
for the person doing the death, not the person receiving the death.
A little column A, a little column B. Autoerotic asphyxiation goes wrong sometimes. Just saying. So this ended up getting so bad that some of the wiser of the Eldari kind of felt some stirrings in the warp, like, hey, some bad shit's going down because we're doing this. We should stop. And the rest of the Eldari Empire said, fuck off. And they said, okay. So then they made the craft worlds, and they kind of started flying off into the farthest reaches of the galaxy to try and get away from all this. And even then, very few of the craft worlds survived, because what this was doing was feeding in this hedonism and these dark desires and all this angry murder boning into the warp. Those emotions were coalescing into the nascent Slaanesh. And when Slaanesh felt...
Can you clarify? Are you saying that the Eldari that protested these sorts of like pleasure cult activities tried to escape, or the Eldari that were in those cults tried to like concentrate all of their little activities?
Now, they didn't try and concentrate it. The birth of Slaanesh was an accident. An easily preventable one, but it was an accident. The Eldari that became the Craftworld Eldar realized something bad was about to go down, and they made these kind of planet-sized colony ships and fucked off, trying to get as far away as they could in hopes that they would survive. And only a few of them did.
Like a Death Star?
Sort of, only without the deafening. They're really just meant to be homes for the Eldar. So whenever Slaanesh was birthed, something like 99% of all of the Eldari Empire was destroyed. It in fact was such a catastrophic event that it ripped a permanent hole from real space into the warp that is now known as the Eye of Terror.
How is the warp different than the Suz galaxy spanning interdimensional labyrinth known as the Webway? How is that different than the Webway?
The Webway was it's kind of an in-between dimension. It exists in between reality and the warp. It is the glass that the mirror is made out of, not the real space or the reflection in the mirror, but the glass would be a good analogy from, I think.
Okay, so I guess the warp would be like the silver paint on a mirror?
Yes, it's kind of this dark reflection of reality where every living thing that has a soul, its thoughts and emotions exist within the warp. And that's how things like gods and demons are born, because when you have these big collective beliefs of, say, let's just say the Easter Bunny. You got, 7-8 billion people on Earth now? And if every single one of them believes in the Easter Bunny, then that collective belief coalesces in the warp, and there is this warp entity known now as the Easter Bunny. And with enough warp energy, it can break into real space, and there's the Easter Bunny.
Okay, so also the way you describe the Eldar, that they're apparently extremely connected to the warp, could the human race do the same thing? Are they particularly connected?
So the humans do still have a warp presence, but it is nowhere near as strong. Human psykers have the strongest warp presence. So imagine the soul as a fire, and your presence within the warp is how big that fire is. Most humans have something akin to like embers, just tiny little sparks floating around out in the warp. And now there's billions and billions and possibly even trillions of humans now in the time of 40K. So that many embers together, going to be pretty noticeable still.
We are a little like cockroaches, honestly. Yeah.
But an individual ember isn't much. A human psyker is something akin to a candle where there is an actual flame. An Eldar soul is like a bonfire.
Okay.
They had incredible warp connection. And it was because of that that their actions had such incredible effect on the warp. In fact, they had actually managed to basically chain up the other three Chaos Gods before this event. They were not a problem until Slaanesh was born, killed off most of the Eldar, and freed the other three Chaos Gods in the process.
How did Chaos Gods get born? If Slaanesh got born through this particular thing, were the other Chaos Gods born similarly?
Sort of, yes. They were always kind of nascent warp entities, and it wasn't until... I believe the canon explanation is it was during the Dark Ages of Terra, like during our Middle Ages, whenever there was a lot of religious animosity and like people were dying for stupid reasons, and you had things like the Black Plague and stuff, that they fully took shape. So for a quick refresher on them, there are four Chaos Gods currently now. There is Khorne, who is the god of blood, the god of war, the god of anger and fighting. You have Tzeentch, who is kind of the god of fate, the god of magic, and the god of manipulation. Nurgle, who is the god of plague, the god of disease, and the god of rot. And then you have Slaanesh, who's kind of the god of hedonism and the god of excess. The first three were made at least kind of in their concrete forms during the Dark Ages. And then Slaanesh was born later.
Does 40K, I realize this is slightly a tangent, does 40K have any particularly cool lore about like middle age, what's the right word? Like anecdotes about these creatures. Because even though humans aren't particularly connected to the warp, if these actions did help precipitate these Chaos Gods, would they have made their presence particularly known to humans
so
back then?
I believe they tried to, but the Emperor of Mankind, either directly or indirectly, intentionally or unintentionally, prevented that. Because it used to be psykers were a lot more prevalent in human society. They were called like medicine men or shamans or like witches, that kind of thing, kind of back in prehistoric times. And there is a canon wherein they kind of realized something was going on, that the Chaos Gods and the demons were coalescing into these concrete entities and it was going to be a problem. So all of the psykers, literally in the entirety of humanity, came together, committed a mass suicide, like fused their souls together in the warp. And then that collective warp entity of every human psyker ever infused itself into a human child. And that became the Emperor of Mankind. And something about that event caused psychers to stop being born for like a couple thousand years. And as a result, there were no human psychers for a very long time.
Wow, that's some dedication.
There's like some anecdotal things where it's like we believe that the Emperor of Mankind in that setting was actually Jesus Christ or was actually the Dalai Lama or something like that, because he was supposed to be guiding humanity from the shadows. And it wasn't until after the Dark Age of Technology that he finally decided to show himself and make his Imperium of Man.
What if he was like Alexander the Great?
He may have been. He may be Chris Chan for all we know. they allude to that in If the Emperor Had a Text-to-Speech Device. It's one of the funniest jokes in the entire series. So to get back on track, the Eldari Empire accidentally births Slaanesh. Slaanesh eats like 99% of all Eldari souls. Some of the Craft World Eldar survive. I believe there were a few Maiden Worlds, I think is what they were called, where the Eldar decided to kind of colonize the outer reaches of the galaxy. And live a more agrarian lifestyle and not participate in all that horse shit. But really, only four factions of Eldar survived this. There were the Craft World Eldar, who survived by literally just running away as far as they could. And then there were the Drukhari and the Harlequins, which survived because they were in the Webway at the time. Because they were not in material space and they were not close enough to the warp, Slaanesh simply could not reach them. Not all of them survived being in the Webway, because this event did also shatter a lot of the Webway and make a lot of tunnels uninhabitable and fill them with demons and stuff. They've had to basically reconfigure the Webway to be usable after this event. And then a fourth faction came up. I believe they're called the Ineas or the Inead, and they are a new faction that worships the old Eldar god of death, who... either did die during the initial purge because Slaanesh ate all the Eldar gods, except for like two, because of course she did. He either survived this somehow or is being reborn through this new phase of worship. And they're a fairly new faction.
Neat.
So the Drukhari, being in the Webway, they have this city. This giant city that has been expanding and expanding and expanding ever since this event, called Kamarat. And it is just like the worst place in the galaxy to be. The Drukhari are the faction of Dark Eldar. They are the Eldari people who said, "Oh man, that sucks that the vast majority of our species died because of these horrible, torturous, hedonistic, stupid acts that we've been doing. We're going to keep doing them. We think it's fun." And the other factions, all the factions of Eldari, have managed to protect their souls from Slaanesh in some way. Like, Slaanesh is actively trying to eat every Eldar soul. If Slaanesh sees you, you're fucked. She's going to eat your soul. You're dead now.
Why does she want to eat their souls? Just like
because the Eldari made her, they're kind of like the most delicious thing to her. Like, hey, I'm eating my parents, basically. And also because they have this incredibly deep connection to the warp, they are also just more powerful than other psychers. So, tasty nom-noms.
Does she get anything else from it besides them just, you know, being her favorite treat?
Not really.
Not really? Okay.
Not really, no.
She really is the god of hedonism, then.
She really just wants to eat all of those ones. So, the Craft World Eldar have protected their souls through making, like, these soul stones. Basically, upon the moment of your death, your soul gets trapped into this stone and Slaanesh can't reach you. And then you are given kind of this collective afterlife in the, what is it called? The Eternity Circuit or something like that, that exists within the Eldari Craft Worlds, where all of their soul stones get placed in. They are protected there, and it's kind of this basically soul-powered energy source that the Craft World runs on. The Harlequins survive because their god, Shegarok, the Eldar laughing god, who guards the Black Library, basically the fount of all knowledge in the galaxy, is actively protecting their souls. Can't take these ones, they're mine, basically. The NES are basically doing the same thing. Their god of death is like, no, these souls are mine, you can't have them. The Drukhari don't have that. Basically, Slaanesh can't fully reach them, but she's got a real long, real thin straw into each Drukhari soul. and is constantly just sipping away a little bit. Can't fully reach, but I'm going to take what the hell I can get.
The Jukari sort of sound like they would feed themselves to her once they reach, like, you know, whenever they feel like dying.
Oh, no, they hate Slaanesh. They want to live forever.
Well, I mean, aside from, like, the selfish reasons, why do they hate Slaanesh so much when they basically embody everything that she is?
It's because they refuse to admit that. They're like, nope, this was not our fault. Fuck y'all. And that's how the Jukari meet. And so because of that...
I think I've met some dudes just like that.
Yeah, pretty much. The Jukari, as a result, cannot use any psychic powers. Mm. And so, like, because if they did, like, to do so is to reach into the warp, and that would be like painting a big old bullseye on your head and blaring Fortunate Son in your Ford F-150 at 4 o'clock in the morning while driving 50 miles an hour down a suburban road. Like, people are going to know you're there, and they're going to be real unhappy about it. So if they even still have psychic powers, they're very atrophied. Mm. As a result, because of that, that's like basically the only way they manage to survive. Slaanesh is still sipping away ever so slightly at their souls. And as time goes on, they become more and more withered, and they almost go feral as their soul is drained away by Slaanesh. The only way they have found to replenish their souls is that they can take from the souls of others by drinking in their suffering. The more a creature suffers, the more it replenishes the Jukari who see the suffering. And that is what their entire society has grown to revolve around.
That's really just a big old circle then, isn't it?
It really is. And it's because of how their society works. It's a lot of backstabbing. It's a lot of nobody trusts anybody. And their hierarchy is entirely fucked because of it.
It sounds like they're on the brink of extinction because of this.
They kind of are. They're very numerous, and they're very mm-hmm. hard to get rid of, but they actually would not be hard to, like, fully exterminate. Like, if the Imperium of Man were to decide, we're going to send an entire battle fleet into the heart of Komorog through one of these webway portals, they probably could take down the entirety of the Jukari city of Komorog and completely wipe them out. It's just the amount of resources needed to be dedicated to the task would leave them vulnerable elsewhere. And so they've decided it's just not worth the time.
I was thinking it sounds like they're on the brink of self-extinction almost, because they sound like they're constantly fighting each other about various things.
They are, but there is like this tenuous. So like if you kill somebody openly in the streets, you're going to mm-hmm. get lynched for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously you have slighted somebody. So it comes to a lot of like, if you're going to kill somebody, if you want somebody dead, it has to be done through subterfuge. And as a result, the High Archon, the big boy of Komorog in the city, is Archon Vect, Azdrubiel mm-hmm. Vect. Mm-hmm. And he created the system of cabals, where mm-hmm. it used to be there was like still this Eldar hierarchy of nobility. You had to be of noble birth and of noble blood to have any kind of power. And Vect engineered this huge, decades-long, gigantic middle finger that wiped out the majority of the nobility in Komorog. Which they are, the remaining nobility is incredibly pissed about it, because Vect is a lowborn. Vect was a nobody, but just had mm-hmm. so much. He's such a giga-chad big brain that he caused the downfall of the Eldar nobility and is now the big boss of everything. And so he created this system of cabals, where you have people who are incredibly good at what they do, whatever that may be, and they kind of head up these lower groups below themselves. And it's in theory a meritocracy. If you mm-hmm. want to advance in a cabal, you have to prove that you are worth advancement only by actually making yourself useful and showing that you have talent and that you have dedication and that you have the mind to, you know, work within Jukari society. Do you actually move up in the society? And that in itself can be a dangerous game, because once you show yourself to be competent, people, of course, are going to want you dead because they want that same spot.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I was saying about the self-extinction. They sound like they're just like a particularly bad rumor away from like a big old civil war. Like, even though he got rid of all of the nobility ruling classes, what's to say like an oligarchy comes along and becomes a new nobility in their place?
They've tried. Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, Vect is actually such a goddamn badass that you really just don't fuck with him. Like, no one can trace any of these events directly back to him, but anytime you try and do something that would be a threat to the power of Azdrabael Vect, you happen to go missing. And it doesn't matter how protected you think you are. Oh no, you slipped in the bathtub and broke your neck and also got stabbed 50 times and also have been poisoned. Well, that's a dangerous bathtub. Man, that's why would you have that in your house?
He sounds a little like Putin. A
little bit, only, you know, competent. Take that, okay. Putin. I hope you listen to this podcast, fucker.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That makes sense. It's just this real chaotic, tenuous society.
It is very tense.
Everyone is kind of trapped in their own little space, and so they take it out on everyone else.
Yes. And it's all kept in place through the chains of fear. That Vect literally just is so damn badass that if you step out of line, he will make sure that you and everyone else knows it.
So by step out of line, is he able to be like bought? Or, I don't know.
In some regards, he is, yes.
Yeah.
It is possible to, like, make, like, get enough favor. But, of course, like, Vect is Vect. He knows that, like, no matter what kind of concessions you're making to him, whatever bribes you're going to give him, eventually, at the end of the day, you're still a Drakari, and you're probably going to want to stab him in the back, too. And he's not going to trust you. He may give you his aid, but if you do anything to cross him, he's going to wipe out you and your whole family. That's just what's going to happen. There's actually, in the book, an event wherein Vect was meant to have died, and all of the other Cabal leaders who he worked with showed up at the funeral, and a lot of them were like, aha, now is our time to shine. Now is our time to take power, and like, very few...
jerking themselves off, I see. Yeah,
only a few of them actually showed any kind of loyalty to Vect, like a 1% of them. And, at the end of the funeral, Vect pops out of his coffin and is like, surprise, bitches! Now I know who's going to betray me! Murdered everyone there, only resurrected the people who were loyal to him. And ended up, like, again, just completely reshuffling the power structure to make sure that he could not lose power. That's proving to everyone that you do not fuck with Vect.
What did he do to the people who were just sort of neutral about it?
Well, then, they weren't... It doesn't matter. He left them dead. They weren't worth his time to bring back.
That's fair.
Which also brings us to the fact that Drakari, it's damn hard to actually kill them. So that process of kind of regeneration through drinking in the suffering of others, it's not just a regeneration of the soul, it is a regeneration of the body as well. So as long as you have a piece of a Drakari, and they haven't been dead for too long, you can place them somewhere where great suffering is happening. That little piece of their soul that still clings on to that little bit of flesh will start drinking that power in, and their whole body will slowly regenerate, starting with bones, the nervous tissue, organs, muscles, skin. Their whole body will come screaming raw back to life, built from the suffering of the things that they've seen. And that launches us into the homunculus covens. They are another subset. So they are also a type of hierarchy that exists within Camarag. But they don't necessarily answer to the Cabals. They kind of work alongside them, but most of the time kind of just want to do their own thing. And the Cabals really can't do anything to force them under their thumb because they need the covens to survive. So in that way, they get away with a lot of shit. The homunculus covens are masters at bioengineering. They are masters of creating suffering and using bone and sinew to create horrible monstrosities. They elongate their lives by doing crazy-ass surgeries, like some of the greater homunculi will take all of their organs out of their body and put them in an external carrying case that they hold onto their back to give themselves a slimmer profile that makes them harder to shoot at. They'll do crazy shit like that. And a lot of them are so ancient that even through the most grueling forms of suffering, like, they've seen it all. Who cares? So it's very hard for them to regenerate in any kind of way as a result. They will always look piss ugly because of just how old and how crazy shit they've seen. And a lot of the Cabals have worked out with homunculi covens that, all right, in return for some service or some debt that you owe to the coven, we're going to cut off your pinky and grow you a new one. And now if you ever die in combat, we will take that pinky out of storage, put it in one of our labs where we're working on these people, and you get to watch their suffering as we perform these horrible surgical aberrations, and you'll regenerate.
Well, you mentioned in the funeral story about regeneration. Is that the same process, or is it a different process?
It is the same process.
Okay. All right.
Somebody somewhere has a piece of you that they can expose to suffering, and you will grow a new body from that. Your soul will continue to exist because that little piece of you still exists.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where the homunculus covens like shine. That's their big worth to society, because all the shit they make is horrifying. Like, there's a story of the homunculus covens where the Tau Empire, the weird, dumb blue fish face aliens, were being attacked by, I believe, Tyranids. And the Tyranids were going to just completely eradicate the Tau. And the Drakari show up out of nowhere and they're like, hey, we'll help. Cool. So they team up and they fight and they win the first battle. And the Tau say, all right, what do you want in recompense? Because you've helped us so greatly. And they say, we want 100 of every one of your casts. We want 100 earth casts, water casts, fire casts, air casts. And we also want 100 of your ethereals, who are like the Tau leaders. And they were kind of loath to pay this price, but they did it because, you know, these people did save our lives. And they considered it like a cultural exchange, was what they kind of painted it as. And in the next battle, the Drakari, they bring in these horrible, twisted abominations. It looks like they're in constant pain. Their faces have been ripped off and replaced with steel masks. They've got their fingers have been sliced off and replaced with syringes that inject horrible toxins. And they're just screaming in an agony the entire time. And after that last battle, and they finally rout the Tyranids, the Tower like, hey, what in the hell were those? Oh, those are what we call racks. They were made from the people you gave us. And of course, the Tau were furious about this and tried to attack the Drakari fleet, but the Drakari fleet uses flicker fields that make them look like where they're not, and they had already left. Eat shit, Tau.
Mm-hmm.
Now to tangent off of the suffering stuff more suffering stuff. This is something I really like about Drakari society, is like you can really flow from one topic to another because of how intricately they are intertwined, but different in their own way. You have the witch cults, and they kind of do, they provide a similar service to the homunculi covens, where they create mass suffering in order to provide for the people of Camarog, but they do it in a much different way. For the witch cults, it's a matter of spectacle. They refine killing into an art form, where it's like we're riding around on hoverboards and trying to create the most daring acrobatic kills. We're weaving barbed wire into our long braided hair and trying to elaborately kill people with our long ass ponytails in like horrifying ways. And they do this as like big arena spectacles. Like the rich members of cabals and upper Camarite society come in and they watch these spectacles as like forms of high entertainment. And it of course does feed their souls. It regenerates them and rejuvenates them as well, because it's horrible, horrible suffering. But instead of being as a matter of necessity of like, I'm going to die and you have my pinky and can regenerate me in a lab, it's a matter of, I'm feeling a mite peckish. Let's go to the witch cult arenas today and watch a man get his penis cut off and fed to him.
Bread and circuses, dang.
Crazy shit. The most well-known of the witches is Lelith Hesperax. And Lelith Hesperax is a bad bitch. She is the greatest witch to have ever lived. She is unnaturally beautiful. She's still fucking pretty, even by Eldar society standards. And the Eldar are known to be, they're space elves, so of course they're supposed to be super pretty. And even then, she is considered the prettiest among the pretty. And she is also the most graceful killer. Every single one of the other witches and all of the other succubi who work underneath her are all fiercely jealous of her talent, of her just natural aptitude for killing, because they will all get surgeries and take combat stims and do anything possible to elevate themselves, and Lelith needs none of it. She is 100% natural Eldar and is better than all of them.
To be honest though, I feel like intense jealousy seems to be something that the Drakari probably experience a lot.
Oh yeah, constantly. It's practically what their breakfast is.
Mm-hmm.
And this covers
a little bit of suffering in the morning.
Just a little, just a dash of suffering with milk in a bowl.
And then just put that in there. It's like salt.
And that covers like most of like what the society is like, because everything that's outside of that is really going to be outliers. There's other units and stuff that they have, but they are one of the races that employs mercenaries to work for them, so they don't have to get their hands dirty and that kind of thing. One of the coolest kinds of mercenaries they do use, because they won't always want to get their hands dirty.
I feel like they would want to be always dirty all the time.
So they're kind of like a mix between space pirates and nobility, where like their main bread and butter, the way they kind of get on, is they make raids on real space. They'll say like, that planet's got a lot of dudes on it. We're gonna suddenly show up out of the webway. We're gonna be completely invisible, and we're gonna only decloak whenever we're already on the surface of the planet, and they don't have any way to fight back. And they're gonna a lot of their weapons are made to inflict as much pain as possible, but not kill. And only incapacitate, because their goal isn't to murder everyone, it's to take slaves. The slaves they bring back and they put them in the witch cult fight pits, and they give them to the homunculi. The, basically, slaves are their form of currency, because that's how they build their empire. And from there, you get into other things like how much of their empire is slaves versus how much is actually Drakari, and like what does that mean? Because the Eldari... They used to proliferate like rabbits. They used to have a human like birth and gestation cycle, and they ended up banging so much that they broke their dumb useless bodies. They can't give birth very easily anymore. So trueborn Drakari children are very rare. Trueborn Eldar children are very rare. They do happen at times, but it isn't a common occurrence. And Trueborn are considered kind of like a nobility of their own. We're like, we are the real Drakari. We're the real Eldar. Because the rest of Drakari society is basically all vat-grown lab tube babies. Where they'll just, the homunculi will take a bunch of genetic material. They'll do a bunch of like random reshuffling. In a week, be able to grow like a fully adult Drakari. And they'll just dump them on the streets and say, survive. If you live more than a couple weeks, maybe a cabal will take you if you're lucky. And that is where the vast majority of the Drakari's numbers come from. Of course, if you're trueborn, you're actually being taken care of.
Oh, sorry. Do they like die? Like they die like really often? Because you said that they live basically forever. So I'm struggling to understand why they would have the desire or like the pressure to reproduce more. Other than, you know, to grow soldiers or something like that, when they want to live forever.
So they don't want to reproduce naturally most of the time. It really is mostly the vat grown thing. It's usually like a status symbol to have a child is why they would do it. Be like, look at us. We are young and we are virile and we have this child, and this child will grow up to be a scion of our society. Not like you horrible vat grown filth in the streets. And even from there, they'll do crazy shit. Like, there's I think one of the Drakari units are called Scourges, and they have wings. They are Drakari, but with wings on their back, and they can fly. They're functional wings. And they talk in the book about how, like, they'll go down and they'll pay some horrible price to one of the homunculi to have these wings grafted onto them while they're still alive or still awake. And can feel every bit of it, all the nerve pain and all that stuff going on. And while the wings are like freshly grafted on, the nerve endings are still mending and all that stuff. And the ritual is they have to take their still bleeding wings and fly all the way to the top of the spires of Camarag to prove that they are worthy, that nothing on the way has killed them, and they have the agility and they have the presence of mind to even make it up there. That's how you prove your worth as one of the Scourges.
Do they have any issues with infections?
I'm sure they do. I'm 100% certain they do.
Like, that totally seems on brand for them, making them fly right after surgery. But, like, I feel like there's a certain point where things have not quite healed enough where you probably can't actually even control it.
Yeah, like a lot of them die on the way up. So much of their society really plays into that extreme masochism and extreme sadism. For instance, the Cabalites, the basic soldiers for the Cabals, their armor that they wear. They don't wear like heavy plate armor like a lot of the other races of 40K do. They want to be very agile because they're not necessarily the most robust of beings to begin with. So they always want to be very agile. So their armor is like very form fitting, very lightweight metal plates, and also covered in barbs and hooks on the inside. mm-hmm. pierces into your flesh and is held on by the fact that you have a bunch of hooks in your skin and muscle tissue. That's how it is adhered to your body. And they'll, like, I don't know, one of those is an injector that can inject combat stims, maybe.
No wonder they lack resilience in numbers.
They are very agile. Very mm-hmm. fast.
Very fast. I mean, like, if you're just blocking out all of that pain, probably you'd be pretty fast. Probably wouldn't be particularly good at taking any hits.
No, but they do have, like, a lot of very interesting combat rules that play into that. Like, there's one of their rules is called Power from Pain. And the longer combat goes on and the more units get injured and the more units die, they'll get buffs. Like, they'll get invulnerability saves as, like, yes, I've been shot and my left arm was blown off, but that dude over there is in such incredible pain and my left arm has now grown back. And they're so just inured to pain, like, they don't feel it anymore, that, like, a lot of, like, they'll get, like, invulnerability saves. I think they just have a base, like, 6-up invuln save. As long as you can roll a 6 on the die, they don't take any wounds just because it don't hurt. They're used to it. It don't matter to them.
Especially on top of the wounds they already have just from wearing armor.
Mm-hmm. And all of their weapons, like I mentioned before, are things that are meant to, like, cause pain and incapacitate rather than kill. They do have a lot of very deadly weapons, but a lot of those are used as, like, anti-tank, anti-aircraft kind of things. Their most common anti-infantry weapon is a weapon subset called shard weapons. You got, like, mm-hmm. shard rifles, shard pistols, shard carbines and stuff. And they fire these little crystals that contain toxins in them. And the toxins just cause screaming agony in every single nerve of your body.
Mm.
And as a result, they have, like, toxicity rules where, like, they will automatically wound on a hit roll of a certain amount or something to that effect, because you're not, you know, seeing if you can shrug off a bullet, the poison's already in your blood, you fucked. And that's their most common type of weapon. They also have crazy war gear. Their technology is very advanced. Lots of anti-gravity technology, things like the flicker field I mentioned, where they can appear to be somewhere where they're not. They have a unit called the Kronos Time Engine that can walk up to somebody and force advanced entropy upon them. And they just begin to wither away and die right in front of everybody, which I assume is awful to experience.
I think they probably do more than wither away if we're talking about entropy.
It's bad times. It's a bad day in social studies when the Drakari show up.
Social studies. Yeah.
They have haywire grenades, which can cause vehicles to fly out of control. The witch cults have incredibly interesting weapons because they value the spectacle even in combat. Witch mm-hmm. cults will be brought in just to do crazy shit in a battlefield. Like, one of their weapons is called the Razor Flail, and it's a sword, and they can detach it, and now it's like this giant long whip made out of serrated razor blades. And they're, like, whipping people's skin off with it. They have, like, barbed nets where they'll, like, throw a net on you, and this net has tons of fish hooks on it meant to dig into your skin as you struggle and cause pain. Crazy shit.
Why does that sound like a character from, what's that fighting game called, Soul Calibur 2? What was that lady that had that whip that was covered in razor blades?
I don't know Soul Calibur. I don't like fighting games because I'm very bad at them.
It was a long time ago, back when arcades were still, you know, pretty commonplace.
I miss you, arcades. You were fun mm-hmm. to go to.
Mm-hmm. They were. Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. What was the question I had? The question I had was, how many Drukhari just die in battle because of their own wounds? Their self-inflicted wounds.
Who knows? I would imagine it's not a lot because, given that their whole society revolves around, you know, drinking in pain, and they do have a lot of advanced medical technology.
I mean, like, drinking in pain is one thing, but, like, bleeding to death is a whole other thing. Especially yeah, but, like, if your armor is, like, continuously stabbing you.
Well, it's very small needles and hooks. And, like, of course, if your whole society revolves around on you being in pain and causing pain most of the time, you're probably going to know your limits and the exact limits of everyone around you, because it's very important information.
Mm. That's fair. Or they just take a lot of drugs. A lot of combat drugs too.
Yeah. So many combat drugs.
Coagulants, you know, so, things like that.
And that would be, like, part of the limits you would know about.
Oh, that's fair.
And even then, like, a lot of Kabbalite soldiers, especially if they're even worth their salt, don't actually die. Like, yeah, you'll get gunned down in the midst of combat, but, you know, somebody's got that fingernail in that lab. You'll be fine. Especially if the raid is successful and they manage to bring back slaves. So that's gonna be about our time. You got any final questions or thoughts that you want to expose? I don't.
Thanks for teaching me things. I liked learning.
I like teaching. I'm so fucking into 40K.
You're like, just call me Professor.
Just call me Professor Dork.
Dorkosaurus. There we go.
What's the name of that one Inquisitor? Inquisitor Sherlock Cousteau. Obi-Wan Sherlock Cousteau. Inquisitor Obi-Wan Sherlock Cousteau.
Oh, they really real. Just mashed some things together there, didn't they?
40K in its early years was goofy as shit.
But what was, when did it cross from goofy to just metal?
I think that was between third and fourth edition that it finally, because it used to be called Rogue Trader and was basically a comedy space version of Warhammer Fantasy. And then it kind of evolved from there. You can actually go back and like look at a lot of the models and like be like, this is a third edition model and this is a fourth edition model, and see like, here is this pop culture thing that happened and changed 40K. Like, if you look at the Imperial Guardsmen, the kind of infantry troops of the Imperium of Man, you can look at them like, here's like the third edition soldiers, and they're all very like flamboyant military officers. They're wearing a lot of bright colors, and they're doing like kind of like the French thing or like the German thing where they like wore a lot of colors and a lot of coats and stuff like that. And then the movie Starship Troopers happened, and then they all look very Starship Troopers.
Yeah. I can see Starship Troopers having an incredible influence on something like this.
Oh, they certainly did. It's very Dune heavy. Like, you can see Dune all over the place in 40K. Mm-hmm. You can really see like the way pop culture influenced 40K and made it kind of into this beast it is today. And which is probably why it's so dang popular, is because it just has those little bits and pieces of all the things that everyone already loves.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
But that is our time for this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Socials are a thing that we have, supposedly. So you want to find us on Twitter, we're D20Dudes on Twitter, or at D20Dudes. You want to find us on Facebook, we're facebook.com/D20Dudes. And we have a Discord server. It'll be down there in the description, because I'm not saying a bunch of random numbers and letters for our Discord link. That just seems like a silly billy thing to do. And I actually have the list and the D20 ready to go this week. I hope everyone's proud of me. I'm not having to scramble to get these things open and ready. So we're going to roll the D20 and see what next week's topic is going to be. One day I will roll the die and it won't immediately go off my desk. Number 6, The Land of Tenra. This is going to be kind of like the history, not necessarily like a full history, but like talking about the geography and like the different cultures in the Land of Tenra and Tenra Bacha Zero itself. That'll be next week's topic.
That's exciting.
So thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll catch you in the next one. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.